A4.
Number 2, B.
Let's look at it still further, because I like to point out these things. I come back to it when we investigate unreality, and we will see the connection between what we see and what Mrs. Eddy presents. Let me read from another article that appeared recently on that question of matter and what is matter, which stated that matter is much more dynamic, undulating structures. Now, don't think of structures as a building. Structures is an immaterial concept. That matter is dynamic, undulating structures, which remind one more of waves than of pellets, than of quantums. Thus, it has become much more meaningful to think of an electron in terms of dynamic interrelations. Can you hear? Dynamic interrelations. Relation is something immaterial. It's no more material. Or of behavior patterns. That's immaterial. Rather than in terms of substance. Again, can you see what he says? That we should rather think of matter than in terms of substance. We should think in terms of dynamic interrelations or of behavior patterns. He goes on and says, in our time then, to ask what an entity is fundamentally is to ask not what it is made of, but how it interacts with others. See, no more to ask what it is made of. Matter is no more a question, what is this made of? What are the building stones of matter? Or what are the building blocks of matter? But much more to see that we have to do with relations, with structures, therefore with order. And all these terms are immaterial principles. Finally, he says, matter is basically relational. Can you see what happens in the world? In the thinking world of today, they really debunk matter of the substance concept and begin to see that we have asked the wrong questions and that we should rather ask a right question, namely to see matter not as substance essence, but as interrelationships, structures. And when we ask that, then we lose the concept of matter, because it becomes immaterial, and it's a small step from there to the immaterial principle of spirit. Yes. Now, we have seen that matter is pushed to the borderline of metaphysics, and that therefore belief, human mind, is really that which we should investigate. Because we experience just as much matter as we have material beliefs within us. And as there is that relationship of mind over matter, we should really also investigate the nature of mind, small m, mortal mind, human mind, or what we could call mortal consciousness. And so we come to point 3, to mortal consciousness. And I just want to go quickly through the teaching of Christian Science in regard to mortal consciousness, so that we are very clear afterwards that when we leave that whole mental realm behind us and go into the realm of spirit, that we know what that mental realm is and where its limits are. Point A, the basis of mortal consciousness is mortal mind. What is that term, mortal mind, which the public doesn't understand? It's a technical term of Christian Science, which we use so frequently, but we should also be a bit aware what we mean by that term. It is, so to say, the omnium gatherum of all human beliefs. Is that a term you know, omnium gatherum? Yes, of all human beliefs. Therefore, mortal consciousness really consists of all that what may be called mortal thoughts, all the thoughts coming from the brain. It is opinions which we entertain, all the various human opinions about anything make up that mortal mind, all the various concepts and conceptional thinking, where we go always out from a limited sense of things, from the conceptional sense of things, namely what we conceive of. It consists of traditional beliefs, all that has been handed down through the genetic code and through history and collective beliefs to the present age, right from the magic age. We have been handed down these traditional beliefs, which are still awake in us. It consists of educational beliefs, what we have been indoctrinated, and everyone is being indoctrinated by all the mass media, by education. It consists of moral beliefs. We are all somehow stamped by a moral code, by an ethical code, and that code changes from country to country, from race to race, from century to century, and from year to year. They are all beliefs. Another component part is just pure common sense, which should not be trusted. It's a good thing to have sometimes, but it is still belonging to that whole realm of mortal mind and human consciousness. Further, human theories, human doctrines, dogmas, sentiments, all that, all taken together, really make up what we call mortal mind. It's a vast field of the conscious and unconscious human consciousness. And of this mortal mind, we know something from Mrs. Eddy, which we should never forget, namely that mortal mind sees what it believes, and believes what it sees. It feels, hears, and sees its own thought. I think it's a masterpiece of showing in a short sentence the whole problem of mortal consciousness, that it really sees what it believes and believes what it sees. And if we would take that really at heart, then we would no more be bothered by what we see, because we would then know that we only see what we believe, and that the remedy is within ourselves. That all the remedy is within ourselves, within our mortal consciousness. I come to B, that mortal mind brings discord. We know that which is made up of mortal mind within us is that which creates discord galore. Just brings forth discord. So the cause of discord is never a thing, place, or person. Never. We should never look out into the universe and blame a thing, a person, or a place, or anything for anything. It's always our mortal mind that is to be blamed. And that is really what today psychosomatic medicine naturally knows. That's why psychosomatic medicine tries to correct the psychic attitude of a person and not so much the body. It does not start with the body, but with mortal mind. So we must know that from now on, we never think of anything outside of us as the cause of any discord whatsoever. So that we are really sure that all that matters is what goes on within our consciousness. And that naturally afterwards we will have to ask, what is that consciousness which is in accord with reality and therefore brings forth only concord. I come to see, to seeing that mortal consciousness really consists of individual, collective, and universal beliefs. This is so important to see, that it consists of individual beliefs. All right, we know that in a general way we say, all right, you have entertained a wrong thought, and because you have entertained wrong thought and wrong sentiments and wrong beliefs, it brings forth in your life, in your experience, in your body, discord, wrong effect. That is more or less what every Christian scientist has accepted and knows, but he makes a great error usually, by blaming himself for having wrong thoughts. And so he begins with self-accusation and self-condemnation because he hasn't seen something, which I will touch upon later, that even individual beliefs are not personal beliefs, that they are impersonal. And so we just wait for another 5 minutes or so to touch then on that. But let's first see what kind of beliefs are at work within our consciousness, so that we are quite aware that there are not just our individual wrong thoughts and wrong consciousness and wrong beliefs that have an effect on our life and on our experience and body, but that we also have to deal with collective beliefs. Collective beliefs are what? Are beliefs that are shared by a collectivity. What are these beliefs? There are quite a lot of these collective beliefs, like the belief in epidemics. The moment there is an epidemic going around, what you have as epidemics, flu, call it flu? Or grip or influenza? Well, this is usually a collective belief, and everyone is proud to get it, and it is on sale. All right, here you see it very often, that people get that flu and say, I did not even know that there is a flu, you say a flu going around, yeah? So they say, I didn't know. And as I didn't know, why could I get it? Well, the teaching is that it is not only the individual belief that has an effect, but that it is the collective belief that has also an effect. Collective beliefs are like national beliefs. Every nation, every family, perhaps every race, every class, every religion has its own beliefs and suffers under it. Therefore, we have to see that there is a whole range of collective beliefs that are working on us, no matter if we think of them or not, no matter if we are aware of them or not. So often people come along and say, but I didn't know anything about it, so why should I be influenced by it? Why should I be the victim of it? And the answer is, now you are living in a mental realm, and that mental realm is not just your individual mental realm, it's also a collective mental realm, and so the collective beliefs have their impact on our lives. Next to that, we have the universal beliefs. They are even stronger, more powerful. What are such universal beliefs? There are these beliefs under which not only people suffer, but under which animals and plants and I don't know what suffers. These are the beliefs, the general universal belief that there is death. The plants die, the fish die, the birds die, even the microbes die, and people die. It's the universal belief that there is a beginning and that there is an end, that there is a birth and that there is a death. It's the universal belief in accidents. Everybody hears about accidents and reads statistics on accidents and takes in that there is such a law of accidents. These are universal beliefs. Not only people have accidents, also animals have accidents and birds have accidents. So you can see it is a much vaster realm. Or you have floods or earthquakes, you have storms, lightning, heredity is a universal belief. The universal belief in poison that acts not only with people but with all other living creatures too. It's the universal belief in astrology, in cosmic influences, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. There's practically no end to it. I just want to build up in front of you first a terrific picture how big mortal consciousness is in order to debunk it afterwards. But it is blindness to think that only that which is going on consciously within our own consciousness can have a effect on us. And that's therefore why I have also taken here under C the conscious and unconscious beliefs. See, this is the great merit, if I may say so, of psychology too, that they have substantiated Mrs. Eddy's discovery insofar as they have found out that actually there is at work not only conscious beliefs, but also unconscious and subconscious beliefs, and that they have shown that the conscious beliefs of those of which we are aware of are only a very small part of all the beliefs that are at work in our life. That the subconscious beliefs and unconscious beliefs may be about 90% of all the various beliefs which we entertain, and that these unconscious beliefs are really the ones which we should handle and of which we should be aware of. So that it's not necessary just to watch only our own thoughts and watch really if you are thinking right or not right, if you are thinking constructively or destructively. We have to tackle a completely different, bigger realm of beliefs than just our conscious individual beliefs. And this is something that people don't like to hear because they feel that they are the victim of something else. And they are. And they are. And they don't like to admit that. And this is why we have to see something more about the nature of mortal consciousness. So I come to D, that we have to see that beliefs are impersonal. And here we get an answer to many questions. Whatever the realm of mortal consciousness is, we must see that it is not a creation of men. It's not our creation. We haven't created beliefs. Therefore, we are not the originator of beliefs. See, and if we see that, then naturally we see that more than just our individual beliefs are at work. That beliefs existed before man came into existence. That we have to. The moment we see that the realm of mortal consciousness is bigger than just the individual wrong thinking, that it has to do with the collective and universal beliefs, that it has to do with the conscious and unconscious realm of beliefs, then we begin to realize that those beliefs are not man-made, or at least not made by us. Because we have been thinking wrong yesterday, we are punished today. But that there is that enormous realm of mortal consciousness at work, and that has not been created by men. I think that article in Retrospection by Mrs. Eddy on page 67 is terrific, where she brings out the following. I just quote a few passages out of it. It says, "Sin existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed." Think of it. It is not we that invented sin, and it's not we that sin. Sin existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed. There was sin long before mortal man existed. There was sin in that age before men came down from the trees. Sin exists in the realm of animals just as it does with people. And so Mrs. Eddy goes on and says, "One's concept of error is not the whole of error." Can you see? One's concept of error, our individual awareness of error, is not the whole of error. There is much more to it, to that error. Therefore, we can see that we can only tackle the whole concept of error from a much higher basis than by arguing against our individual awareness of error. That the much bigger question and problem is at stake than just to correct our conscious individual wrong thinking. And without seeing that, we never really can touch the science of being. She goes on and says, "The human thought does not constitute sin." We haven't discovered sin. We haven't invented sin. Sin existed before that. It says sin constitutes the human thought. We are sinned by the human thought. We are sinned by sin. And we don't create sin. She says sin created the sinner. If we take that statement and see it clearly, then we also liberate ourselves completely from that sense that because we have been thinking wrongly, we must suffer and be penalized. then we begin to see that what has been wrong in our thinking is not created by us, but by a general universal claim that sin created the sinner, that we are not the creator of sin. And I think that's the greatest teaching, right at the, not the greatest, but one of the greatest teaching, right at the beginning of the Bible, that there was that wonderful woman, that great wonderful woman called Eve, the first real woman, first real savior, who could say, the serpent has tempted me. She didn't say, God did tempt me, nor did she blame herself for doing it. Adam blamed the other one for doing it. But she was that one who could see the impersonality of sin and said, I didn't sin, God didn't sin, therefore sin sinned, and therefore could put it right away from herself, could put it right back to where it belongs to sin, and that is a universal collective belief. And in this way liberated herself from being punished. And so we will learn how when we find the remedy for universal beliefs, that we will have no punishment on us. Yes. Well, here I have to stop.